Dingles, it's Boozy. I'm just checking in on you and just making sure that Ruggles the Bear is okay. I mean, I know he's staying at your house. Is he keeping an eye on you guys? Miss him? Just tell him we love him. Take care. Bye.
Hello, I'm Kelly Ford and I'm a comedian. That's my brother. His name's Grant, but we've always called him Boozy. We've all got silly names. There are four of us siblings and we lost my mum when I was aged 15. She was quite eccentric, Jilly. She would often pick me up from school in a white transit van, wearing a swimsuit with a cat sitting in the front seat. She was always late, and when she opened the side door of that transit van, quite often a piece of pottery or a bag of potatoes would cascade out on the floor. She was very embarrassing. Driven, vivacious, fantastic, but very embarrassing. We only really have three or four photos of us as a family, as siblings growing up. And anything that is connected to Jilly, like Ruggles, her ancient teddy bear, I really cherish. And Ruggles has just made it through a 30-degree wash, Boozy, you'll be pleased to know. But I've always thought it would be great to speak to other mums, mumming it without a mum. I have a 4-year-old daughter, Tabitha, and I'm expecting another one in February, my lockdown cliche. In this series, I'm going to be talking to mums, doing all those mum things, all that organising, all that brain confetti, but at the same time, managing grief and bereavement. In today's episode, I'm talking to comedian, broadcaster, actress and promoter of afternoon comedy clubs, Screaming With Laughter, Hattie Ashdown. If you've never been to a Screaming With Laughter, you've got to go, especially if you've got young kids. It's an opportunity for parents to get out the house and watch live comedy, quite often with a glass of wine. So something definitely to put on your list after the vaccine comes out. Hattie is a mum to two boys, and today we're remembering Pat, who Hattie lost 4 years ago. Have a listen.
Okay, so to give her her full name, she, Patricia Mary Ashdown, Nee Smith. I just know that because, funny enough, I went to a grave this weekend, which I don't do a lot, and then because it hasn't on the gravestone, I forget. I was like, well, it's funny, isn't it? But Nee Smith, obviously, her maiden name.
What drew you to go to that space this weekend?
Well, I wish it was like a spiritual thing to be drawn to, but my sister was going over, and as much as I don't mind going on my own, if my sister's going and I've got the chance to go with her, I'd rather, you know, she was like, oh, I want to tidy them up because we've got, like, because I lost my dad as well. I am an orphan, and we've got my dad there, and then we've got a couple of aunties, and then we've got our nan and granddad, and she was like, we need to go and, you know, needs a good old tidy up, and do you want to come with me? She said, you don't have to. And actually, we haven't been together for a long time, so it was quite nice to go together. So
do you feel kind of a sense of calm there?
I've really tried to find a connection there, because I know when I was little, my mum would take me to my nan's, and I quite liked it in a weird way, if that sounds, you know, like you do, yeah, as a kid. You're skipping around the graveyard and you're like getting the bucket of water, and it was, and it's quite a sunny spot and all that. So I've done the same. I've tried to take my kids, but I'll be honest, really struggled with trying to find like a kind of like, ah, oh, you know, like feeling close to her, because she was buried, and I didn't really want her to bury it. And it's a long story, and we all sort of came to an amicable decision. And I found the whole burial thing very kind of, it's just very, it's so real and raw, you know, you are seeing them go into the ground.
Yes.
And I think when I go there, I'm trying to build up that kind of like niceness, and it's coming. So like last year, God, this year's just gone crazy. So it was now last year, we went up, and maybe it was around time of her birthday, I can't remember, because it was sunny, and I said, it was just by accident, we had some food for the kids and us, and I said, well, let's eat it by the grave. And there is actually a bench there. So we ended up having a picnic there. And it was really nice. The sun came out. And I'm just sort of trying to build like a nice connection with it rather than this kind of like, oh God, her, you know, without being brutal. Like, I'm just thinking there's bones under there. Like, I don't know. I know it's horrible.
The visual element of burial, yeah. And you're kind of replacing it with family and Scotch eggs.
Yeah.
So, Hattie, can we go back to the very beginning? And I'd love to know, what was your childhood like? How was it?
My teenage years, to sort of work backward in a way, weren't so great because my dad died just before I was a teenager, and I sort of took it out on her, wasn't very nice to her. And certain brother-in-laws like to bring that up. It's like, oh, thanks very much. I really, you know, I feel a lot of guilt about that now. But I was a teenager and she was crying a lot. And I just wanted normal life, you know. I know it sounds awful now to say, but reading lots about grief with children and stuff, it's very normal to feel all these things. Well, I just wanted to go back to school. I just wanted my mum to stop crying. I just wanted a normal life. So I wasn't very nice to her. But before that, I would say, yeah, I mean, she would say things like, I'd hear people say, you know, oh, that because she had me very late in life, that was, you know, I did a whole Edinburgh show about it.
I'm excited to be here. To be honest, I'm excited to be here at all because I was a mistake, yeah. Or a pleasant mistake, as my mum would say.
She was in her, you know, mid-40s when she had me, and she would say, oh, well, you know, you were like my little mate, you're my little friend. When everyone else had flown the nest, I was still at home, and she would say that I think we were very close because of that. And sometimes, I'm not saying...
Were you her last child, Hattie?
Yeah, I'm the youngest, yeah.
So you were like her baby.
I really was the baby, yeah. And she would say, you know, I kept her young and stuff because obviously she was going to things that other, you know, mums were younger, and so it kept her young. And she was actually very young in spirit. Very much so. She didn't look young. She dressed, as I used to say, she was like, she was born with a bubble perm. You know, she was just very old fashioned in the way she dressed and everything. But she was a child of the war. You know, she grew up with that sort of 40s, you know, sort of influence. So we were very close when I was little, but I think the teenage years, not so much.
And at what age were you when she died?
So 39? Yes, 39. Yeah.
So she saw you really flourish.
Yeah, and I should feel very grateful for that, you know, like sometimes I think, because when I'm sort of like, feel very sorry for myself, I do try and remind myself that I'm lucky that I had her that long. Obviously I have all these regrets where I'm like, oh, she never came to a gig, but yeah, she saw me graduate, and I'm so glad she saw me get married, and she saw me have my first child, which I think was a big shock. She was always kind of like, oh, I didn't know if you're going to have children. I was like, oh, I only used to say that to be cool, you know, because all my sisters had kids and they had them quite young. And I was like, I'm not going to have kids, you know, I might adopt one. I had to sort of say that, you know, and I think I was always trying to be a bit contrary and a bit different. But in the back of my mind, I always knew I was going to try and pop one out the last minute.
So those memories of your wedding and your first child being born, do you really, when you think back to those moments, is it quite vivid, her presence? Was she there for you? I guess that's
right.
She
was, the trouble is, because she, as I say, she was an older mum, so she was getting quite, looking back, we just sort of accept it, because you do, don't you? You just sort of like, you don't sometimes always look at how maybe a week someone's getting at the time. But looking back, it was like, oh, she was, you know, not, you know, her walking was not great at the wedding. Like, I would have had her walk me down the aisle, but we would have been there all day.
That's it.
But what we decided, but also I had this again, God, I'm such a madam. I had this thing of like, you know, like, my dad's not here. I want to walk myself up the aisle. I'm an independent woman. And then, so, and
you
then,
go, in, girl.
Yeah. And like, and they all clap for me. And, but then last minute, I was like, oh, mum, would you sort of like, when I come, would you sort of like stand up and join me for the last couple of steps? And that was lovely. And well, she was very present in the sense that, I wore her wedding dress. So,
oh wow, Hattie, that's incredible.
I'm so lucky to have that. But he was literally like, it was a bit of a fairy tale, that bit, because we were so like, we had no money for this wedding, and I was saying to my mum, I just can't find the right dress. It was one of the only things I was like willing to spend a lot of money on, or when I say a lot of money, you know, a bit of money. And then I said, I'm just not sure what I'm looking for. And I said, can I look at your veil, and I'll, because maybe I could wear your veil. That would be a nice thing to do. And she got her veil out and it's all gone like chewing gum, because it just like she hadn't looked after it properly. And then there was the dress, just like in a bloody Tesco's bag. Honestly, I said,
waiting
Mom.
For you.
I said, and it was a bit, you know, it needed a clean. And I said, oh, let, I said, let's just try it on for a laugh, you know. Anyway, I couldn't get it done up at the side. It's one of those side zits. But I went, Mum, I love it. Like, I think if I can get it altered a bit, would you mind me wearing it? And she went, oh, you're, as she would. She was like, oh, ain't you a girl?
Ain't you a girl?
She went, would you? And I was like, yeah. She went, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. And then, but then she'd always like to throw in, well, you know, I was a 27-inch waist. And I was more like 37.
Yeah, 27-inch ankle. But what, that is pure magic, isn't it? That's something from a Disney film, Hattie.
I know. But so I had it altered and done up and everything, and yeah.
That's great. Super magical. Now, what age was she then when you got married, and what age was she when she passed away?
So when, so she, I know when she passed away, it was 82. So I'm working backwards. So she was what, I don't know, late 70s. And because she always had this thing, she said, my mum died at 82. I bet I'm going to die at 82. And I used to say to her, don't say that, mum, you know.
Yeah, stop it.
Because I think there was a certain point where I realised that I've got a lot older mum. She's possibly not going to be here for as long as other mums might be, you know. And so everything was always subliminally in a way, but like in terms of getting married, maybe I wouldn't have got married so quick, you know, like as now I might have had a longer engagement. But I think in the back of my mind, I was always like, well, you know, we've got to do it, got to do these things. And I think that's been one of the really hard things since she's died, is that doing big occasions, and again, this is something me and you have talked about, sometimes I've felt like, what's the point? And I know that sounds very depressing, but you said something on, I think it was on good old social media about, you know, doing an occasion. I can't remember what occasion you were doing.
Marking the moments. Yeah, I'm a big advocate that actually all those moments, the birthdays, the anniversaries, the bar mitzvahs, all of it has to be celebrated.
But honestly, Kelly, it really like made me go, yes, I'm good. You know, like, because when we had my first child, I did a naming day and everything. And obviously she was there. And but with my second child, it felt a bit like, you know, is there any point? Who really cares? Like, she loved all that. She loved, because it was an excuse for all the family to come together. But I also realised since she's gone that but I was always wanting to please her and make her proud. So I did do another naming day, and I did it the same as my oldest, where I did like combine the first birthday and naming day. And if anything, I went out bigger.
Made it a moment.
Yeah, made it a moment.
So Hattie, were you there towards the end of your mum's life?
Yeah, she was in a hospice. I wasn't there like when it happened, but no one was, as in, which sounds horrible to say, but as in they don't know exactly, like everyone had gone to see her. I think I'd left early after. It's one time I'd left quite early, which is quite typical. People say these things. I'd left like in the afternoon, and funny enough, I'd been going in every day, but I was going to meet a friend for dinner, and I was already feeling a bit like, oh God, should I? And then I was like, actually, it'd be really nice to do something a bit normal. You know, if you're in and out of a hospice, it's just like a weird world to be living.
And you felt like it was coming to the end? Like, did you
feel
that?
No, I don't know. Honestly, I really had my head in the sand. I did not. And my sister says this. She goes, you really didn't take in what was happening. I could see. And I was like, yeah, but I do that. They say that I do that. I shut down a bit.
A way of blocking out anything sort of negative. Okay.
It's been annoying sometimes because I don't take in things and then I get a delayed reaction. And so I went out for dinner and then my sisters left about 9 o'clock that night. And my oldest sister, because, you know, like that was the protocol was to call her if it did happen without us being there. And they just were doing their checks. And when they were doing their checks at 12, she'd gone. So we don't know, you know. But one thing we try and hold on to is that the nurses said that, you know, she all the time you're there, you're very chatty. We're all chatting around the bed. And she said, I see it a lot and I think people hold on while you're there. And they don't, because she'd gone into sort of unconsciousness, like not very long, like literally the day before, the evening before. Do you know what I mean? Like,
But it's almost like she didn't want to miss out on any of that chat.
Yeah, don't want to miss out on it. And also maybe just in, yeah, yeah. Well, she was like that. We were like a clucking little birds. And she was just like this, because she was quite quiet, my mum, and we're all really loud. And so.
How does that happen?
I don't know. We grew up around all these strong, loud women, but my mum was quieter. But she could have her moments with us, but at home, you know, she'd be silly at home when we were all mucking about, but she'd be shy out and about. I mean, if I went out with her, she'd get me to go and do the thing that, you know what I mean? Like,
go and get the alcohol from the newsagent.
Yeah.
So Hattie, were there any moments from when you had your firstborn with your mum, so those moments of grandchild with grandmother, that really stick out to you? Like, did she love your firstborn? What's your firstborn's called?
Oh, Huxley.
Huxley. Yeah. What did she think of Huxley?
Oh, well, yeah, she was, she always wanted a boy. We're all girls, four girls, so she was very happy about that. It was made joke in our family, you know, about the fact that she wanted a boy and
she got one. Well done.
Yeah, but I mean, she did have other grandsons before him, but they're all like quite a bit grown up, like when Huxley come along. So Huxley's cousins are quite a bit older than him. But she obviously, I think she just thought it was a miracle the whole time I was pregnant. She just couldn't believe it. But yeah, I mean, in some ways it was sad because she was sort of like getting on then that she couldn't. Well, when I say getting on, I mean, some, you know, I meet some women and this breaks my heart sometimes. And I'm sure you have these moments all the time, like where I was like talking to this nan who was 85 and she's like dropping off her grandson and she was hop skipping, you know, she's virile. So it's nothing about the age, but my mum, for different health reasons, you know, wasn't physically great. So in some ways it was sad that she wasn't there for me a lot when I was pregnant and stuff. And obviously when I had him, whereas with my sisters, she used to babysit and all of that. So
practical help, yeah.
Yeah, that practical help. But I guess it was life preparing me for a going, I guess. But I do remember weirdly moments like me breastfeeding, because she was a real advocate for breastfeeding and not all my sisters did or could or whatever. And I remember once I'd gone upstairs to do it, there was some males downstairs, not that I'm bothered by that, but you know, just like sometimes.
No, but sometimes it's better for the baby to have a quiet
exactly
atmosphere, blah, blah, blah.
And I
helps still, the milk, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm still new and I just like was like, oh, I'm going to sit upstairs in my old bedroom. And at this point she was using her stairlift. So I heard this like, and she came up. She went, what are you doing? I said, I'm feeding. She went, oh, yeah. And she went, I'm coming up. And she came up and she just, yeah, sat with me. And
Is touching.
I've got this picture of her holding him of that moment. But unfortunately, her face looks really miserable. But she wasn't. She wasn't great with photos.
But you know, when you look at that photograph, that was that moment where she must have been so proud of you.
At this moment, I don't know if it's just because, you know, for whenever people are listening to this, we've been going through a lockdown. And it's been very tense. But I've actually found myself being really hard on myself, and I just keep thinking I'm not doing a good enough job. But that is
the mum guilt.
But that is getting better, touch wood. We have a lot of emotional problems with our oldest, and he's got a lot better. And I think when he was really struggling, you just think, what have I done wrong? You know, you just do. You can't help it. You know, now I've got a second, it's a whole new challenge, and I think I'm trying to be just enjoy it more. I think that obviously when my oldest was young, we always say, like, we were in such a hurry for him to get to the next stage. So with the youngest, I'm really trying to savor every moment. The age he's at now, my mum would have died when Huxley was that age, not that long before. So I got to be honest, Huxley being two is a blur. I think I just was going to play groups, pushing the pram and crying and trying to hide it, you know, from him and stuff, even though he was a toddler. But, you know, you don't want them to just think, oh, mummy just cries all the time. So I'm making the most of it. I'm trying to take on, and I'm not just saying that for this, I always am trying to take on things that that I liked from her way of parenting and ways.
Well, that's, I was going to say, like, do you do some of the things with your kids that she used to do with you? Like, are there any things that you're like, oh, we're having fish and chips on, you know, on a park bench, or what things are they?
There's not really like a very, very specific thing that you would do, but just like, my dad used to like chop up, whenever we had chocolate, he'd always like, or any sort of treat, he'd chop it up and put it on a little plate, and it always just tastes nicer like that. And I try to do that with them, like, they don't just have a bar like you are, and now they both always go, get a bowl. I mean, it means a lot of washing up, but they always have it in a little bowl and broken up, and it just tastes nicer, I think. So that's for my dad. But I think just the kind of silliness. My mum, even though she was shy, but behind closed doors, she would put music on and we'd dance. And I know this sounds all very like idyllic, but I just tried to. I don't think I'm as, I know I'm not as patient as she was. She was so patient. I think she lost her rag with me a bit, because I think that's where Huxley gets it from. Like, one thing she did say to me, because he was having tantrums even then at like a year old, and she was like, I know someone else who was like that. And I was like, really? And I don't know about you, but this is another big, massive thing that drives me mad, because I have so many questions that I just wish I'd asked her about what I was like as a child and stuff. And because you just don't, though, do you, when you're like a kid and or whatever, you just don't. But now I'm a parent, I want to ask all these things.
Absolutely. And I think like those questions of like how you were, but also how they cope.
Yeah, how do I cope?
Young children.
How do I cope?
And you know, how was that recovery after your C-section? You know, did you lie down for 6 weeks? You know, I just, there's a million questions. Oh. And actually, I think sometimes personally, when those questions start getting a bit excessive, that's when I can feel quite sad,
really?
Because I know Well, I wonder in your case, Hattie, when you were thinking, God, I want to just ask her, you know, something about how to deal with toddlers. You know, when did she get me on the potty, for instance?
Yeah.
And actually, you're like, no one can answer that question, and it can kind of take you back to that state of loss. Yeah, but also just loss of like, no one can answer that question like that person, your mum, could answer. So the question thing, I 100% relate to. And I've become the person that started saying 100% and I can't stop saying it. And it's really annoying.
And I don't know whether we've spoke about this as well, but the other, and this is sort of skipping subject a little bit, but one of the biggest questions, Kelly, I just really would want to ask her is, how did you get over losing your mum? I mean, I don't know what your mum's situation was. So I guess it depends whether they wasn't close or whatever. But either way, even if they're not close, it's, I know people that weren't close to their mum, they lost their mums, and that it's still a loss because it's still hard because you're grieving not being close to your mum. And that's a whole nother grieving journey. But that is something, you know, and again, I try to ask my sisters and, you know, they try and give as much information, but they can't remember. But they're like, oh. And my sister had started to do, you can buy them in any shop, these books where it's like stories with my mother or something. And they're brilliant. And anyone who's listening, whose mummy's still alive, bloody do it with them, because it's ask them all these questions like, I don't know, who was your first boyfriend? What was your most favourite Christmas? And just really random questions. But my sister had started to do it with her and she got some answers, but yeah, it didn't get finished.
I think that's such an important thing to do. And I think because of everything that's happened, I'm a little bit fatalist, I guess, and to the point where even with my daughter, I have a diary, one line a day, and, you know, whatever's happened in that day, I'll just put in a little moment. I don't do it all the time. But right. I just think documenting, you know, all the moments so as it's always remembered, because I have four photographs of me and my siblings as children. Right. And I find that quite... Anyway, this is your show, Hattie. This isn't my show.
Yeah, and my mum's diary, but she kept, like, a more of a like appointments type diary, but then every now and again she would write a little bit of like, and we went to the bakeries and we got this, and I just love reading those, even just those. It's like, just gives me a little flavour of her.
Yeah, that's gorgeous. So we've touched upon your sisters. There's four of you. Who are your support network? Because I just think, like, when you don't have a mum, you do have to have a crew dem who are kind of there for you for those questions about, you know, disposable nappies at 4 a.m.
Well, I think in terms of whether it's emotionally or practical, it's probably different. But I think, it would be my sisters with, you know, practically. I think at the beginning, we all sort of dealt with grief in very sort of quite different ways. I just had to get back into looking after an 18-month-old, so I didn't grieve like they did, and I've always feel like I'm a little bit behind them, because I just sort of had to put it on hold. I felt like they could take a few months off work and sit on the sofa and drink sherry and cry, and I sort of had to get back out there, you know.
And do you feel with that in mind, Hattie, because you had to keep buggering on, that you kind of kept your grief, you put it in a suitcase, and then, you know, you had your second kid, and then suddenly, actually, oh, you're like, oh my goodness, there's a suitcase under there, and it's full of hurt and sadness. I've got to open it up now.
Well, actually, I was quite good in the terms of, although I said about a delayed reaction thing, something went to me, ding, and I was like, I never had any help or anything to do with my dad. And something went to me, I'm not, I could see what was going to happen. I was like, I've got a kid, I've got a husband that works a lot. I was like, if I don't put something in place, this is just going to get, like you say, brushed under the carpet. So I, funny enough, a friend of mine told me about this grieving organisation called Cruise, who are free, and he recommended them. So I signed up to them because it was a waiting list. And I think it was also to give me space. I knew I'd go to see them and speak to them, and that would be my space. Because otherwise, with a new baby and being self-employed, there was no space. There was no space. And so they have been my mental support. My sisters have been a practical support for my kids. I mean, I don't, if they listen to this, I don't mean this horribly. Not like at 3 a.m. because they live a little bit far away and they've all got their own family and kids. They're not like, it's not Ramsey Street, you know, they're not a couple of doors down, unfortunately. But one sister who lives closer, she is great, and they have a special bond with her. Anyway, Cruise, oh, they've just been brilliant. I mean,
is it kind of a counselling service?
Yeah.
So can you can talk to them regularly about how you're feeling? And is it at moments when you're feeling particularly bereaved, can you pick up the phone?
Well, I just got, they do different things. Yeah, you can just call them anytime, or you can set up a group, or they do groups, or you can do one-to-one. And I went for the one-for-one, but that ends at a certain point. And I've got to be honest, the only things I would warn people is that when it ended, I then went for another grief because I was like, what can I do without talking to her, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And then I heard from another friend who remained nameless. They said that their husband had like just carried on seeing them privately, sort of thing. And I thought, oh, I wonder if that's something I could do. So I asked her if I could see her privately. And she was like, yeah, give it a bit of time. She wanted me to sort of go off and not see her for a while. And I was like, so I think it was almost a year before I called her up and said, you know, could I start seeing you again? Because I really liked her, you know, I didn't.
Yeah, you
as
build
well.
A relationship, and also yeah. You've revealed all your deepest truths and moments. So that was an amazing experience. Are there any other tools that you use that you know works when you're feeling sad?
I'd say one of my toolkits is, and this is going to sound like an obvious thing about crying, but my mum, again, this is the thing, my mum had so many bloody wise things to say. So it's like a double-edged sword. When I think about things that she would advise, it's her saying it, but then that makes me cry as well. But she was like, she was big on crying. She was like, it's good for you. If you don't cry, you'll make yourself ill. So if I feel like crying, I just bloody will. And I'll have a good old cry and I won't hold it back. And I think she was right on that. And a lot of people say about music, my mum, again, as I say, loved music, and there's so much music that reminds me of her, it's ridiculous, but there's specific albums and things that do. And at the beginning, I would say to, I nearly said her name, but the lady I speak to, I'd say, oh, I just can't, you know, it makes me so sad. And she'd say, but what's wrong with that? What happened? And I say, well, it makes me cry. And then she'd go, well, what's wrong with crying? I go, oh, yeah. So it's been nice now that certain artists, where, you know, otherwise they come on, don't they, when you're like, walking around a charity shop, suddenly, you know,
yeah.
Carpenters come on or whatever, which is one of them.
Oh, they get me every time, Carpenters and Bette Midler.
Oh, really? Yeah. I mean, it's not to say it doesn't still make me cry, but I can start to enjoy it as well and remember, I mean, one of the songs she... I'm going to cry now. She loved was
okay.
Edelweiss, you know, Sound of Music?
Absolutely, Hattie.
She loves that song. And I sing it to my youngest nearly every night when I put him to bed. I mean, sometimes
that's so beautiful,
sometimes
Hattie.
I make up my own words.
But she's in the room with you when you're singing that. Yeah. And that is what is magical.
But then otherwise that would have been like... almost like too hurtful and too sad, but I've making it, so this is my tips and tools, I guess, is making them part of your life, that it's not so agonizing. I think quite early on, my sister said, you know, she knew of people that seemed so bitter with grief and so curled up with it almost. And she said, they seem like, you know, they're living their life in this bitter sadness. And she was like, I don't want to be like that. I want to get to a point where it's not about getting over them, and watch out, here's another cheesy line, it's being able to walk alongside the grief, or it walk alongside you. I don't know, I can't remember, but I heard it somewhere and I like it.
Hattie, you have just been, I knew that this conversation would be this incredible. You've been so honest. You've done the Brené Brown. You've definitely put yourself in the ring and you've shown your vulnerability. And
oh, thank you.
It's been so nice to get to know Patricia. And I'm just so grateful for you joining on this very first episode. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me and being able to share a bit of her. That's all I ever want to do. At the funeral, we said, be more Pat, because she was just so non-judgmental and very silly and very warm. And yeah, and there you go. Thank you.
Be more Pat.
Be more Pat.
You've been listening to Pod of Mum with me, Kelly Ford. Hattie spoke to me online in autumn 2020. As Hattie mentioned in the show, crews were significant in helping her with her bereavement. So if you want to find out more about crews, log on to crews.org.uk. They've got a helpline as well. If you want to find out more about me, head on over to Instagram at Book of Mum. A big thank you for listening. Don't forget to like and subscribe. Wishing you a great week.